Hello. You're listening to the audio feed of The Demos, a series of essays about an anarchist's plan to end finance capitalism and replace it with an egalitarian union of equal members so that real democracies can actually function within the nations comprising that union. This article was originally published on May 5th, 2025, and you can find the text version online at redthebean.net/blog.html. Today's episode is titled, Meeting and Pedophor. The ICU is common sense now. It's time to act as a global population. Meeting and Pedophor. The ICU is common sense now. It's time to act as a global population. The other day, I attended an online live stream of a conversation between Yanis Varoufakis, Michael Hudson, and Anne Pedophor about how we can stop the rise of fascism globally and bring about some approximation, at least, of a real democracy in this modern tech age, ruled as it seems to be by big tech, so to speak. The talk was exciting because I had been wanting for a long time to ask Yanis Varoufakis two questions. First, is he already involved in collaborating with, for example, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF, to organize a global movement to change the property rights of software we all use and need? And second, isn't it time to demand the IMF and World Bank restructure according to the egalitarian blueprint that Keynes described in 1944? Luckily, one of my questions was selected at the end of the talk, and Yanis gave an excellent answer. Specifically, I asked if he was aware that the free software movement stands behind him, and if he would work more with the EFF to organize a global movement to change the property rights of the cloud, quote-unquote, infrastructure. He said he was happy to hear there were others behind him, and he joked it would be even better if they were in front of him so he could follow them. Then he expressed great gratitude to those at the front lines of the free software and digital rights activist movements, and even gave narrative examples of the kinds of tools that would be available to the public if we could accomplish more of the change in property rights that I described, like an app that facilitates route planning for public or private transportation services, websites for booking hotels and places to stay that are publicly owned and operated such that there can be no monopolistic and exploitative or extortionist schemes holding basic needs like housing hostage, and communication software that does not harvest private data to sell as fodder for advertisers, and punitive, unregulated justice systems, all licensed and developed in ways that the public can hold accountable, and that can be enjoyed and used without costing anyone a dime beyond what is collectively spent on the basic costs to operate and power the servers and development labor. The talk was encouraging because all three of the speakers kept speaking directly to what I consider the most important issues of our time. If we're going to address social justice issues, justice system issues, and the extremely dire climate crisis we've created, we need to focus on establishing public solidarity and participation in a transnational collective government where we're able to work as cooperatively and creatively as we are able to work, without the deadly and disastrous barriers posed by the financial accumulation of power into a small fraction of people's hands. The only way we can work as a global community at our full potential is if we refuse to allow the International Monetary Fund and World Bank to continue to operate and organize as they have been since 1944. I was excited especially about how explicitly Anne Pettifor was making this argument, and so I decided to read more about her and see if I could get more involved in her work to bring this movement about. In general, I have found only more and more evidence that she is indeed suggesting the same thing Yanis Varoufakis seemed to suggest in The Global Minotaur, and what I've been suggesting since reading that book. Yesterday, I read her book, The Production of Money. In The Production of Money, Pedophore explains why we need to organize as a transnational democratic people's movement to insist on common sense international monetary policies and capital controls that provide the stability and equitable, ecologically conscious resource management infrastructure we all intuitively expect of our would-be advanced democratic economies. It is my aim to further flesh out how we will do this, drawing from everything I know about revolutions through history and our present day's unique capacity for unprecedented international communication and coordination in economics. Importantly, Pettifor notes in her book that the global money supply is not controlled by central banks the way we tend to assume it is, but is in fact largely controlled by private firms like banks and credit card companies and commercial banks, which create money ex nihilo whenever someone's issued a new credit card or loan and begins to rack up debt purchasing with that credit. Credit card companies, perhaps contrary to popular belief, are not piles of cash big enough to loan existing money in reserves to their customers. The credit they issue is pure credit. Keeping this in mind, it's easier to understand why the authority and practice of creating money from nothing is a very difficult and entrenched power to prohibit or correct at this point. That kind of credit is constantly increased and accumulating within the global money supply, as we speak, by people using credit cards to make purchases whose debts are then treated like financial assets of their creditors. That credit is legally issued by private firms, but for some reason it is controversial that a central bank should issue credit similarly out of nothing but for the public good, that is, for financing public infrastructure, social welfare programs, etc. It is not necessarily that people intuitively assume credit card companies deserve the power to arbitrarily create money out of nothing and even charge high interest rates from borrowers, though that ultimately becomes an implicit assumption in a culture where such a thing is ubiquitous and unquestioned. But more likely it is that people assume that to establish a credit card company, one must have enough money to loan out so liberally and charge interest rates to be repaid, causing us to largely dismiss the whole industry as legitimate, and even blame ourselves for economic collapses and hard times. But if we do not approve of credit card companies creating money out of nothing and profiting from their magic money by charging and demanding high interest rates be paid back to them on top of their magic loans, as soon as we understand that fact, then why don't we protest the whole affair altogether now? That is what many are now proposing. The idea is not revolutionary in itself, as there have been countless labor movements and events in history when poor and working class people across national borders coordinated their activities and united in one message to demand more democratic conditions and institutions for the betterment of all, despite the despotic powers of the super rich. However, the idea is revolutionary in that never before have people formed an international solidarity union determined to transform so specifically those institutions that have until now been left to rule as an autocracy over the financial and thus the entire economic realm of the world and its people. This revolutionary aspect began with Keynes's original proposal at the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944, where it was outlined and named an International Currency Union, or ICU, using a common currency, the bancor, and recycling both state deficits and state surpluses. Instead of this reasonable, though radical, egalitarian union to justly and wisely maintain horizontal power relations between all nations of the world, the Bretton Woods system was chosen instead, and though it managed to provide the semblance of international stability until 1971, in that time, resource, land, and wealth ownership became increasingly inequitable, slowly but surely solidifying debt-slavery relations between many states in the global south and autocratic, arbitrary dominance of resources, land, and law among those privileged states in the global north. The crisis might have remained a slow roll beneath the perceptible threshold for most people, but it was only possible to maintain that appearance for so long, because once a few countries became disillusioned with the senselessness of their regime and demanded their fair share of the US dollar, still the global reserve currency now, the system collapsed and Nixon unilaterally dismantled the only safety net, placing limits on the amount of control and power the global financial hegemon, the US, had in its regime. In 1971, however, the public was unaware of exactly what was going on, and even today, many are still very unsure of how the international monetary system, finance, and trade are legally regulated between and within different jurisdictions. Thankfully, though, there have been enough public movements like Occupy Wall Street, for example, and enough education and international communication that many are now seeing the obvious flaws with the finance capitalist regime. Popular thinkers like Yanis Varoufakis have called for returning to the ICU blueprint and rejecting all at once the ongoing destruction to our bodies and our planet taking place for the profits of very few, who just happen to be in the right place at the right time to game the whole system ages ago. Now, even lay people like myself and others like me understand that the financial sector does not interact, let alone support, the real economy, and that capitalism, contrary to what most people perhaps thought long ago, does not mean freedom for anyone but the tiniest minority of extremely rich people. And even then, it promises their destruction along with that of everyone else enslaved to its scheme. Indeed, the logic of capitalism is not the logic of a free market, but a market of slaves and slave owners, and a market of wealth exploiting its advantage over the poor to extract as much life and dignity from the poor or weaker party as is physically possible. For better or for worse, the rich have exhausted their privilege and fooled us one time too many. Though we can blame ourselves or our oppressors all we want, we are now a global population, ready to stand up for self-governance, ready to take in stride the steps we must to reverse the direction we are going and adapt to a world better suited to our survival than ever before. Instead of a government shaped like a pyramid scheme, we now all want and know we can have a world with people's governments shaped horizontally, where there can be no autocracy because humanity as a whole has learned to despise its obvious stupidity and danger to us all. Ann Pettifor writes of our need for capital controls, that is, mechanisms to regulate capital flows between countries, which would help rein in the financial sector mostly in their typical attempts to profit from the, albeit illegitimate, ownership of and speculation on money itself and certain countries' advantage as creditors in a world with no surplus regulation at the level of our shared central bank. She and others in agreement with her, including me, speak of the need now for international organizing and international transformation of our central bank and monetary policies in line with what Keynes proposed. It turns out I am not as alone in this thinking as I had felt before. And DiEM25 is a rapidly growing and an increasingly international group of people already organizing to bring about related changes. The only thing left to do is solidify our message in more popular press and media, unite our voices, and coordinate our actions enough to demonstrate our real power over the real economy, to force the hand of those in positions which blind them to what we all now can tell they must do as public servants. The petition for our specific demands is already in mature drafts. If it is perfected soon, it can head on to a vote in DiEM25, the Progressive International, and Indivisible, for example, ultimately arriving at the doorstep of the soon-to-be-transformed IMF, at threat of collective control over real economics. In solidarity, Rachel Iasalucha.